My Coach Cricket Show. And you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And this is Kevin Sampath in Australia. Welcome to another week at the Cricket Show. It's really hot and humid here in Australia. It does tend to get unbearable, but I think it beats the UK at this time around, doesn't it, David?
Yeah, tough being you. You might be able to hear from my voice, I've got a little bit of a cold. It's wet and horrible.
I can hear it.
So, you know, I don't really feel any sympathy for you in the heat there, I'm afraid. Sorry about that.
It's all right. So our cricket season's underway, and our summer of cricket, the Australian summer of cricket, is coming up as well. So can't wait to that. Australia's home games against New Zealand and South Africa. Uh-huh. While the much anticipated, they're getting ready for the Ashes next year. So can't wait for that. What have you been doing throughout this week, David?
I have been training, as always, and working on keeping the My Coach pages up to date. What I'm doing at the moment is I'm working on my endurance or my work capacity. So I'm doing a lot of kind of aerobic type stuff, interval training, circuit training in the gym, and the odd long, slow run just to top it up as well. So I thought what I'd do is, because I'm doing all this endurance work and trying to build up my work capacity and my general kind of endurance, I thought, well, why not combine that with trying to cut down on my body fat as well? I mean, as you can imagine, and I'm not a particularly overweight person, but I thought, well, why not try and get down to 10% or below body fat, which is pretty low for a guy. So I'm going for that particular goal as well, trying to get below 10% of my body fat. So in order to do that, I'm doing all this training anyway. So that's the training side of it sorted out. And then on top of that, I'm going on a kind of specially adapted quote-unquote diet, which I'm only doing for 6 weeks. You know, I'm not a cereal dieter, but it's good in the run-up to Christmas. You know, you can cut some body fat down so you can enjoy Christmas a little bit more. And what I'm doing is I'm having much smaller meals in the morning, and then after lunch in the evening, I'm having much larger meals, well, normal sized meals. So that means I've drastically cut down the amount of calories that I'm taking in over the course of a day, even though I'm not dieting the entire day. I'm only really dieting as such in the morning. And as you probably know, I use the Precision Nutrition System to keep myself fit and healthy nutrition wise. And that advises 5 or 6 meals a day, or not meals, 5 or 6 eatings, feedings they call it.
Yeah.
What I do is I'm still sticking with those 5 meals throughout the day, but the first 2 meals of the day are tiny little half-size portion meals. So I feel very hungry come sort of 2 o'clock when I can start eating normally again. But then the rest of the day, then the other 3 meals I have, they are normal sized meals. So that's working really well. So I'm losing weight and feeling fitter, and I'm doing plenty of weight training as well, so I don't lose muscle as well as fat. This is very important when you're cutting back on the calories like I'm doing at the moment for a very short amount of time. You don't want to lose all those strength gains and those body composition gains that you've been making. So I've been doing weight training to just maintain my current muscle and just lose the fat.
I guess it takes a lot of commitment too.
It does, but I have a little cheat. I build a little cheat in. So on Saturday evenings, I'll always have a cheat. So Saturday evenings, I might have a curry or a pizza, or we'll go down the fish and chip shop and get fish and chips, and we'll just completely cheat. And then on Sunday, we'll have a slight cheat where we have a proper Sunday lunch, which isn't too bad because you've got the vegetables in there, and we usually have chicken or something like that, which is pretty good. We also throw in the roast potatoes and the roast parsnips, and sometimes we have a dessert on that as well. So a couple of little cheats, but over the course of the week, I'm in a calorie deficit, and if you're in a calorie deficit, you lose fat.
And how does your family react to this? I mean, traditionally, it's the girls that usually go on diets and all these little things.
Well, my wife is very supportive. She just lets me get on with it, really. I cook my own meals, so she doesn't have to worry about, cooking for me several times a day. I cook my own meals, and I usually do them in advance. So normally do them 3 or 4 days in advance. I cook a load of stuff up, stick it in the fridge, load of veg up, a load of burgers and things like that. Stick them in the fridge, and then I can just heat them up then as I go along. So it's pretty good, and it's I don't like using the word diet because it's not really a diet as such.
Yeah, true.
Because when you think of diet, you think of emaciated people who are always trying to lose weight and really obsessed with it, and that's not the aim of this at all. The aim of this is to kill two birds with one stone, and while I'm doing my endurance work anyway, I might as well try and get my body fat down just to see if I can get it down to 10% or not. And when I get to the end of those 6 weeks, I'll just go back to normal again.
Whenever I try it, I do tend to give up, only because I have the working lifestyle sort of thing, and you do get really tired, and you can't really go without eating a lot throughout the day.
No, that is true. It is pretty depressing, to be honest with you. That's why I only do it for half the day, because when you're hungry, you can't do anything, can you? You just think, I want to eat, I want to eat. And if you're like that all the time, then I can't imagine being like that for 6 weeks or in a row. That's why I only do it for basically only do it for half a day, and also make sure I get a cheat in, because it keeps the willpower up. If you're feeling hungry, like I was just before we started recording, if you're feeling hungry and you think, oh God. What am I going to do? I'm so hungry. All I do then is think, well, all I have to do is get through to 2 o'clock, and then I can have a normal sized meal and I won't be hungry anymore. And also, even then, even if I'm still feeling the willpower go a little bit, then I can think, well, all I need to do is make it through to Saturday evening, and I can have a really nice, something I really, really want that I know is a little bit naughty. So we're having a curry this week. But anyway, let's get on to cricket. What training are you doing at the moment?
I've actually started to, explore into arm speed training. I was playing over the weekend, and a couple of guys said that I've got my line, my length, but I'm not that quick because of my slow arm speed. So I thought, I should probably try and improve that, try and strengthen or quicken my arm speed to try and get a bit more pace out of it. So I've been trying to bowl with heavier balls and then following that up with light balls to just get my arm coming around quickly. And then even in my weight training, I try to do it quicker instead of really slow movements. That's sort of all I've gotten up to.
Well, that's a good place to start, definitely. The ball thing is quite controversial, because there hasn't been very much research into it in terms of whether it works or not. The only thing I know of is there's been one study specifically for cricket. They've done it with other sports, especially the shot put. Shot put's quite a common one, where they use heavier shot puts and lighter shot puts. But with cricket, there's only been one study done, and that study said that it didn't make any difference. But that is only one study, so you can't really take one study in isolation and say whether it works or not, because it may be that that study wasn't performed particularly well, or it may be that the people within that study were exceptional examples. So you can't take one study and say, oh, it definitely doesn't work, don't try it. And I know from speaking to Ian Pont, who is the man when it comes to anything to do with fast bowling, he is very keen on trying it out to see if it works. His initial testing with slightly heavier balls and slightly lighter balls is that it does make a difference. But obviously that's not under scientific conditions. So you've got a bit of a conflict there as to whether it works or not. What type of balls are you using to make the ball heavier or lighter?
We have little metal balls, as in like they're the same size as a tennis ball, but they're weighted balls basically, and they're about 1.25 or 1.5 1 kilogram, and they can get down as light as 200 grams.
Okay, so they're quite heavy then. They go quite a lot heavier.
Yeah.
But there's a variety of them, so you can pick
Yep.
one which is.
Yeah, that's right. So one which I feel comfortable with.
Yeah, exactly. The thing you have to watch out for, generally speaking, when using a heavier ball, and I'm not against using a heavier ball by any means. The thing you have to watch out for is if you use too heavy a ball, it can alter your action because you start to try and heave the ball over instead of using your natural action.
Would you recommend any exercises or training tips for quicker arm speed?
Yeah, there's some really simple things you can do which will help a lot. A lot of arm speed is to do with technique,
Yeah.
making the arm as move as fast as possible by pushing your chest as far in front of your hips as possible in the delivery stride. So you're almost making a catapult effect. And another good way of doing it is making sure the arm, it sounds like a weird thing to say, but making sure the arm is the last thing that comes through.
Yeah.
So your chest leads the way, because if you imagine a sprinter coming out the blocks,
Yeah.
obviously they're low down, but you they're low down, and what their chest is well in front of their hips and their knees and their ankles.
Yeah.
So you want to recreate that in the bowling action. Obviously you don't want to be low down, but you want to be almost as if the batsman has tied a rope around your chest. This is what Ian Pont says. Almost as if the batsman has tied a rope around your chest and has yanked your chest towards you as you bowl the ball.
Yeah.
That's a technical thing.
Yeah.
But in terms of training, there are ways to train up your upper body for more fast twitch muscle fibers, which is, if you don't know about the difference between fast twitch and slow twitch, or every single muscle in your body has two types of muscle fiber within them, fast twitch ones and slow twitch ones. So slow twitch ones are for endurance type stuff, basically, and
Yeah.
fast twitch ones are for power type stuff. So obviously you want the fast twitch ones because bowling action is a very explosive thing.
Yeah.
Naturally, people have different levels of each one. So if you are naturally got a lot of slow twitch fibers and you're bowling, then you're not going to have as fast an arm if you've naturally got a lot of fast twitch fibers.
Yeah.
But you can train your body up to have more fast twitch fibers, so that's good. So what kind of training can you do? Well, the absolute simplest thing you can do, you don't need any equipment, you don't need any special coaching, all you need to do is clap push-ups.
Okay, cool.
So do you know what I mean by clap push-ups? Yeah, you instead
Yeah,
of just doing a normal press up, yeah, instead of just doing a normal press up, you push yourself off the ground, do a clap, and then land again.
yeah.
And there's different levels of doing that. If you can't, some people can't do one of those, even
Okay.
because it's quite hard, because you need to, it's an explosive movement, but
Yeah. Yeah.
it's a fantastic exercise for fast bowlers. It's an explosive movement. Some people can't do one. If you can't do one, then you can just use one hand and tap your opposite shoulder instead. So push up, tap your opposite shoulder and land again. That's a lot easier
Yeah.
than doing the full clap. Then, when you can do one shoulder, try both shoulders. Try the clap. If you get really advanced, try clap behind your back,
Yeah.
which is a tough one. And the top of the range, super fit, very fast, powerful person one is do a clap in front of you, do a clap behind your back, and then land,
Whoa.
which isn't for the faint-hearted.
Yeah.
If you get that wrong, you end up with a face full of turf, which is not a good look. So just clap push-ups is a brilliant thing to do. If you can do Olympic lift variations, that's another good thing to do. So a good one is if you've got access to dumbbells or a barbell, then you can do an exercise called a high pull, which is a bit like, on the Olympics where you see the guys doing the clean exercise, which is where they have the bar on the floor and they lift it up so it's resting on their shoulder on their shoulders, on the front of their shoulders. You've seen that one, right? That's called a power clean. So that, but that's quite a hard one to learn. If you can do that one, that's a really good exercise as well. But if you if you don't know how to do that one, I wouldn't recommend trying to learn how to do it by yourself, because it's a very, very tricky one to do.
Yeah.
Instead, you can do the high pull, which is almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
You start with the bar, you start standing up, holding the bar at your thigh level, or the dumbbells at your thigh level. Then you crouch down, like as if you were crouching down in a fielding position, or in the slips. So you
Yeah.
kind of crack, so your knees and your hips bend, and then you powerfully drive the weight up, pull the weight up to your chin, and then let it back down again. And then you do that, start with the bar if you're using a barbell, or with light dumbbells if you're using dumbbells, and gradually build the weight up over time. And you want to do about 4 to 6 repetitions and 2 to 3 sets of that. That's all you need to do with that one. And with the clap push-ups, you probably want to do 2 or 3 sets. But when you can do 10 in a set, 10 repetitions in a set, then you probably want to go on to the try and go on to the next level. But if you can only do 3 in a set to start with, do 3, and then the next time try and do 4, and then the next time try and do 5. If you can't do it, just keep trying until you can, and just progress it that way. So those are easy ones. And there's also medicine ball. You can also use a medicine ball. If you can get hold of a medicine ball, you can do throws against the wall, and that's a good way of doing it as well.
So it's really all about powerful and explosive movements in your training.
Yeah, explosive movements. Don't worry too much about doing normal weight training exercises more quickly, because there's the danger element of having poor technique. So be careful with that. But you should be doing those as fast as you can with good technique anyway. That's the standard all cricketers should be doing anyway. But or add in some specific power exercises at the start of your workout. And also at the start of your bowling sessions as well, if you can. You know, if you get there 5 minutes early, do a quick warm up, then do a couple of sets of clap push-ups, and then go into bowling. Then that's teaching your body to associate the explosive power of a clap push-up with the explosive movement of bowling.
Yeah, it
That's
makes sense.
a trick from Greg Chappell.
Yeah.
So that's good. And also, you want to look at the other technical areas as well, like are you using the longest levers that you can? Are you driving your hips through the crease properly? Do you have enough strength and power in your legs? But those kind of additional things. But in terms of specifically for arm speed, you're looking at driving your chest through first, technically, and doing a bit more power stuff in the gym. You don't need to do a lot, but just every gym session, and maybe every training session, just throw something in at the beginning. It literally takes, 5 minutes, and then you're done.
Probably have a we have a few readers' questions to answer, so we should get right into it.
Sure.
Thanks for emailing us this week. The first question is from a bloke called Shaz, and he asks, how much is too much practice? We have practice 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. 3 days a week, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, and 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. twice a week, Fridays and Saturdays. Sometimes we play matches instead of these two sessions, and if I'm free on Sunday evenings, I bowl. I've also got the chance to practice 4 days a week, 6:30 a.m. to 7:30 a.m., Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. It'll be skill training, but I'd like to be sure that it's okay to practice after 2 hours of fitness, sometimes 45 minutes of fitness, 1 hour, 15 minutes skill, the night before. And sometimes I don't get enough sleep, like an hour and a half lesser than usual, but I make up for it after school. It's good to play lots, but will I be overtraining with a schedule like that? He does sound to have like a pretty packed schedule, David. What do you reckon?
Well, that is a lot, and if you've been following the My Coach pages, you know that Shaz has been doing a diary of what type of training he's been doing to make it, because his big ambition is to make it as a international cricketer. So if you haven't got up to date with that, anyone who's listening, you haven't got up to date with that, have a look at the My Coach pages at pitchvision.com/mycoach, and check out his diary. as it used to be called in the olden days.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good question. He's asking about bowling fast, sorry, about overtraining. And it's a very individual thing. I mean, what he's doing there, that's a lot. But he is only, I think he's 15 years old now.
Wow.
It may be too much for him, but you can never say for certain with anyone whether it's too much or not, because some people can just keep going and never show any signs of flaking at all. So what I'd say is look for the signs. There are certain signs which give you an indication of whether you're overtraining or not. The first thing is that you feel tired all the time. If you're feeling tired all the time, then that's a good indication. Your body's trying to tell you something there. You're tired because you need some rest. And it may be you have to cut back, you cut out a session, have a day off, have a week off. It's not going to kill you. Just have some get some rest in. So that's very important. If you're having trouble sleeping, that's another one, because for some reason if your body gets overtired, it starts to get confused about what it needs, and instead of you zonking out and going straight to sleep in the night, you just lie there. Even though you feel really tired, you lie there and you can't get to sleep. If you feel really tired all the time, and then you go to bed and you can't go to sleep, you're just lying there tossing and turning all night, then that's another sign that you're overtraining. If you find that you can't train as hard as you used to, then that's another example of overtraining, because there should be a gradual progression over time. The more you train, the better you get at something. But if you find you're going backwards, you're getting slightly worse, or you're staying the same over a long period of time, that's another example of overtraining.
As you mentioned before, David, it is really a personal thing. I mean, especially in the Australian cricket team, Matthew Hayden tends to train a lot, especially the day before games. He has a few sessions, but Andrew Symons, on the other hand, is pretty much relaxed, and he has a few sessions as much as he needs, and he doesn't really take it over the top as much as other players. So it really depends on your personal preferences. And while training, you know you're overtraining when you lose the enjoyment factor in it. So if you tend to not enjoy things and you're just there because you want to improve but you're not enjoying it, then you know that you're overtraining yourself. You probably need to kick back a little.
I agree. Yeah, that's the psychological side of it. Yeah, which I didn't really talk about.
I mean, you can only ever improve when you're enjoying it, and when your mind frame is positive, that's the only time you can improve. And but if you're negative all the time, I mean, if Shaz is, I don't know, enjoying what he does and he's really looking forward to every training session, looking to improve, then I don't see it as a problem.
Yeah, exactly. And if you find that you're not improving, you're just going through the motions, then that is the time to just stop for a little while. Do something else. Change it up.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely looking forward to how Shaz goes and his progress as his cricket comes by, and hopefully one day we'll see him on TV and he'll remember
Definitely.
my coach.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the great thing about Shaz is that he stays in touch all the time. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to track his progress all the way through, and it'd be lovely to be able to look back over all the different articles that he's written from the age of 14 up until he's a superstar cricketer. So I hope that happens, because that'll be a great story.
As we were mentioning Andrew Symons before, the next question is a bit related a bit to him. And Ben asks, can you give me some tips about hitting over the top of a six and scoring runs quickly without slogging? Thanks, Ben. Now, do you think this is more bottom hand and top hand issue, David? I mean, would you have to bring in your bottom hand more to hit over the top of a six?
Most probably, unless you're extremely strong. I mean, somebody like Andrew Symons or Kevin Peterson, they could probably hit a six one-handed with just the top hand. In fact, I think Kevin Peterson has hit a six one-handed. I think I can't remember, but
I
anyway,
remember
there's
that.
one of the top guys has definitely hit a one-handed six, and they just use their top hand. So it can be done if you're very, very strong and powerful. But for most people, you're not going to have the strength or the power to be able to do that. So yeah, the bottom hand is what provides the power. So the bottom hand, although it is much maligned in batting coaching, it when you actually look at it, it's a very important aspect of pretty much every shot, because it does give you that snap of power that can get the ball over the rope.
Yeah.
Technique and timing are two very big important aspects of that. You know, if you're never going to be able to hit a six unless you're very powerful without a decent amount of technique and a good timing. So you need to have lots of practice of timing the ball, you know, hitting lots of balls in the nets, and lots of practice on getting your timing right. And a lot of timing is to do with the downswing of the bat and the hands working together as the bat moves through the swing. But if you think of it a bit like a golf swing, all the power is generated, same as with a swing with a cricket bat. All the power is generated when both hands work together in perfect harmony. If the bottom hand comes through too quickly, then it's the timing's going to be off. You're going to have power, but the timing's going to be off. You're probably going to hit it up in the air, straight up in the air, rather than over the fielder. If the bottom hand doesn't come through enough, then it's just going to feebly wibble out to square leg or something, and you're going to feel like a bit of a fool. So technique is a very important aspect of that, and you need to make sure that your technique is as good as you can get it. But on top of that, power is the second part of it, because even with poor technique, you can still power through a shot. I mean, we've all played against people who are big and strong and don't necessarily have a good technique, but they can smash it all over the place just by using brute force.
Yeah.
Which are very frustrating people to play against, because you think you're going to get them out any minute and they're just hitting it all over the place sometimes. So if you can build up your own strength, then brilliant. And you do that in three ways. You do that with general strength training, which is the stuff like press-ups, chin-ups, bench press, squats, deadlifts, all those big exercises.
Yep.
Then once you've built up a base of strength, you can move on to more power-specific exercises, like we were talking about the high pulls and things like that, medicine ball throws, things like that. So that's developing the power. So the clap press-ups are another really good way of developing upper body power. It really gives you that snap through the shot. And then if you can do that, if you're really advanced, then you can move on to some really highly specific stuff, like using a heavier bat or using a weighted bat to develop very specific strength, just like using a heavier ball we were talking about earlier. But you don't want to do that as a first step. You want to do that as a third extremely advanced step. But it does take time. You know, you can't get strong in a couple of weeks. You need to have a proper training session over a number of months or even years, and just keep working on it, keep building up your strength and your power like that.
We were discussing slow and fast muscle fibers before, David. Do you think that fast muscle fibers applies to batting as much as bowling?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The quicker the bat moves, the faster the ball's going to move off it. Now, there is a complication in the whole thing about timing. That makes it a bit more complicated, because although timing is an important element of bowling as well, I think it's a critical element of batting. That is why you see little feeble little guys who you think couldn't hit it off the square able to hit majestic fours almost at the drop of a hat, and you think how can he do that? You know, where is the power coming from? Well, the power is coming from the bat meeting the ball at exactly the same moment as the hands are working together to generate that power.
Yeah.
So it's a bit more complicated in that respect. It's a bit more complicated in the bowling, because you have the timing element. You don't necessarily need to have big muscles to power it over the line. But it helps if you can combine both of those things. You can have timing and power, then you can hit sixes at will almost. Somebody like Andrew Flintoff is an example of someone probably more towards the power end than the timing end, but he's still got excellent timing. Same as Andrew Simons, someone more towards the power end than the timing end. But even if he didn't have the power, you know that he's probably still going to be an extremely good player, because he's got the timing as well. The other part of the question was, how do I score more quickly without slogging?
Yeah.
Is that right, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming that he hasn't got a lot of power, because otherwise you wouldn't ask how to hit sixes. If you haven't got a lot of power, what you can do is you can rotate the strike very easily just by playing sort of tip and run. You know, push the ball into a gap and set off. You need an understanding partner at the other end, but if you can develop an understanding, and then you have in your mind that almost every ball you're looking to hit, you're looking to either hit it for four or defend it and run a single, then that's very hard to defend against. Unless you hit it straight to a fielder, it's very hard to defend against. If you drop the ball at your feet and run, it's very hard, if not impossible, as long as the non-striker's backing up, for the bowler can't get there in time. The wicketkeeper can't get there in time. Well, he might get there in time, but he can't throw the ball to the other end in time. So unless there's someone standing very, very close, you're probably going to get in there. Same as if the ball comes on the pads. 99 times out of 100, if the ball hits you on the pads, there's a run there.
Yeah.
Because it goes into an area which is very hard to defend against a quick single with an alert pair working together.
Yeah.
And also you can talk to your partner, you can say, oh, I've noticed the guy who's standing at mid-on, he stands a bit deep. So if you push a ball to mid-on and you think, oh, that's going straight to him, then set off, because he's probably standing a bit too deep. Or the guy at square leg, he doesn't walk in, and he's standing on his heels and he's not really paying attention, he's daydreaming. So if you hit it to square leg, let's go, because he's suddenly, rather than him being a super good fielder who swoops in and knocks the stumps down, he's one of those guys who doesn't notice the ball coming to him until it's gone past him almost. We've all seen those guys.
Yeah.
And he seems surprised when the ball comes to him. So if you get one of those guys, then easy single, that is. So watch out.
Yeah.
And also, you know, watch out for the what handed the fielders are. And if it goes to their weak hand, again, there's probably a single there.
Yeah.
If you've got right-handed fielder and you hit the ball firmly enough to his left hand side, and he has to take a step or two to get it, then he has to feel, either pick it up with his weak hand and transfer hands, or run around the ball and pick it up, and that extra time is enough to buy you a quick single. So you should always be looking for those. And if you're looking for those, you can tick along at 2 or 3 runs and over yourself. Without really having to hit any boundaries.
Yeah.
And that's with a lot of problems you get with people who haven't got a lot of power. They also haven't got the nous to get the extra runs, and then the scoreboard dries up, and you know, everyone calls you a slow batsman. But you're not really a slow batsman. You're just waiting for the bad ball, and you don't always hit the bad ball because you haven't got the power. So if you're in that situation, then look for the quick singles and turning ones into twos and twos into threes.
Yeah, one of the retired international batsmen that comes to mind is Justin Langer. I mean, he's a small bloke. He's not known for hitting sixes, but yet when he and Matty Hayden batted, they almost always kept the run rate over 3.5 or 4 and over. And that's not from fours or sixes. I mean, they just kept constantly rotating the strike, looking for singles into the gaps or hitting to weaker fielders. I mean, they were always aware, so that's probably a good note to hang on to. Christopher Jackson, one of the readers, has sent in a similar question. He asks for any sort of weights or exercises that would be good for batsmen to improve power and strength for hitting the ball long and hard. And you sort of touched on that before, but he also asked if you could let him know what the kind of muscles he'd need to pay particular attention to hit the ball long and hard, I guess.
One of my mantras, which I borrow from somebody else, I don't claim any ownership to it, is that the body works in movements.
Yeah.
It doesn't work in muscles. So when we're talking about how to train for any position, it can be wicketkeeper, bowler, batsman, whatever you're looking at, you don't really want to look at what muscles to train, because that's putting yourself in the mindset of a bodybuilder you know, who do they train body parts? They train chest, they train biceps, they train triceps, they train calves, things like that, because they're aiming to have big muscles and look as good as they can on stage for bodybuilding. Cricketers don't do that. They move. They just move through space. That's all we're doing. And basically, what all this training and all this stuff is to improve our movement through space, make us as efficient as possible. Some people call that athleticism, but it's just really efficiently moving through three-dimensional space. That's what it is. You're just moving, right? And when you're bowling, you're not thinking about what is my chest muscle doing, what's my shoulder muscle doing, what's my calf doing. You're not thinking about that. You're just thinking about, I've got to get the ball down the other end.
That's right.
So that's why you should train movements. And the main movements when it comes to training are pushing and pulling. Pushing is when you're moving a weight away from you, and pulling is when you're moving a weight towards you. As simple as that. So you want to be doing a balance of pushing exercises and pulling exercises, because that way you're covering all the movements which your body can go through. So for batsmen, you do want to be making sure that you're having the power stuff in there, like we've been talking about the clap push-ups. That's good for batsmen or bowlers. The high pulls we've talked about as well. But you also want to do a few batting specific things as well. So you can do a great one for batsmen is lunges. There's lots of variations on the lunge, which is a single leg exercise where you start from a standing position and you lunge out in front of you, and then you move back into the start position again. And there's loads of different ways of doing that. You can do reverse lunges where you move your foot backwards instead of forwards. There's side lunges. There's rotational lunges. You can do them with dumbbells. You can do them with barbells. You can do them all kinds of things. So I definitely look at the one leg stuff, and the lunges are particularly good because a lunge is very similar to stepping forward or stepping back when you're playing shots. And it also teaches you balance. Anything that is giving you dynamic balance is a good thing as well. So single leg deadlifts are a good thing to do, single leg squats. Anything that can improve your balance is good as well, because we all know how important balance is to batting. You know, that's what you hear commentators say all the time. You know, look at the balance of him in that shot there. So the better balanced you can be, the more efficient your batting is going to be. So you want to look at that side of thing as well. So anything on one leg is a good way of improving your balance. But do make sure you're moving. Standing on one leg, there isn't much of a crossover to any athletic performance, cricket included. So, but standing on one leg and then squatting down into that, you know, that kind of pistol position where you've got one leg in front of you, a one leg squat, that is. Squatting down like that is a superb exercise. It teaches you balance, it teaches you coordination, it teaches you mobility, it teaches you stability. There's an exercise you can do with a kettlebell called a Turkish get up, which is another great one for doing that kind of thing. So there's loads and loads of different options, but do the basics first. Build up your strength first, the basics, and then maybe you can, you know, start building in some more specific stuff as you go along. But do it one step at a time. That's my main advice.
So essentially, you're training balance, power, and strength just through movement type of exercises. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking at overall athletic performance. So, what goes into athletic performance? It's not just one thing. It's not just being strong. It's not just being able to go to the bench and lift a lot of weight in a bench press. That is one element of it. But doing that alone is not going to make you a better athlete on its own. It's going to make you better at doing the bench press. But if you can do the bench press and then you can go off and do some single leg work, and then you can do some agility work where you're changing direction quickly, and that kind of, you know, lots of different types of training, then that's going to build up your overall athletic ability rather than just being strong or just being fast. So that's the key, really. Work on lots of different elements and build them all up over time.
We've had a few. batsman questions. I think it's time we had a question from a bowler. So, Lightspeed, someone who calls himself Lightspeed, asks, "Hi, I'm a pace bowler and have an action that puts a lot of pressure on my back. Right now, I'm in the off season, and during practices, I bowl about 7 to 9 overs at full pace. What stretches or other things should I do after bowling? At the moment, I do little stretches, but my back is almost always sore the next day. I'm working on making my back stronger in the gym with deadlifts and pull-ups. Any post-practice advice?" Now he says that he asks for stretches after bowling. Shouldn't he concentrate on stretches before bowling as well, David? Sort of warming up.
Well, it's difficult to say because we don't know what the we don't really know what's going on with his back, so we have to be careful about that. You know,
Yeah.
he could ha he could have all kinds of different things, so we've got to be careful about that. But the first thing I want to pick up on is the fact that he's got an action that puts a lot of pressure on his back. Well, why does he have an action that puts a lot of pressure on his back? That would be my first question. Rather than worrying about stretches and things like that, I would worry more about the action itself because you could be causing yourself long-term damage. I'm assuming he's got some kind of mixed action.
Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah, he's bowling probably with one thing that you find quite a lot is you get, especially younger bowlers, they land with their front, they land as if they're going to bowl side on.
Yeah.
So they've got their back foot landing parallel with the crease,
Yeah.
and then but then they bowl from front on, they bowl from the top from front on. You'd see that quite a lot,
Yeah.
and that twist, that twists them at their lower back. You're all twisted at your lower back. That's a lot of pressure on your lower back. You bowl with it like that for any length of time, you're going to get yourself an injury, and it might be a bad one because you don't really want to mess around with the lower back.
Yeah.
So that'd be my first thing. Depending on what's wrong, look at the technique and try and make an adjustment to try and unmix that action.
So you're saying sort of try and either get fully front on or fully side on?
Yeah, absolutely. You can also go half and half, but the main thing is that your shoulders and your hips are lined up.
Yeah.
So if you, it might be something as simple as because he's bowling with a front on action in the top half,
Yeah.
all he needs to do is change his back foot landing from being parallel with the crease to being at 45 degrees with the crease.
Okay.
It might just be as simple as that, and that will then line up his hips and his shoulders, and he won't get any back problems.
Yeah.
But obviously, I'm guessing here because I can't see the guy bowling, so I don't know whether that's the case or not. So we've got to be careful about giving advice like that. What I'm saying is a very small train change might be enough to sort out the entire problem.
Yeah.
The second part of the question is what stretches and things should I do after bowling?
Yeah.
Well, he probably should. I mean, every bowler should stretch after they bowl anyway, because that's an important thing to do. I wouldn't do any lower back stretches at all because the lower back just isn't really designed to be stretched. It's designed to be kept as still as possible.
Yeah.
So rather than stretching the back itself, I would probably be looking at stretching the muscles that cause it, maybe help contributing to the tightness in the back. So, for example, the hip flexor muscles, which are the ones at the front of your leg that, if you stand up and lift your knee up off the ground, that's the muscles in your hip that are doing that are called the hip flexors.
Yeah.
So, stretching those out at the end of a session is a good thing to do. Also, before starting to bowl, doing some kind of glute activation work, and all that is making sure that the glute muscle, essentially the bum muscle,
Yeah.
is doing its job rather than the lower back. Because if a lot of people spend a lot of their life sitting around, you know, school, work, driving, things like that, you're sitting down a lot.
Yeah.
Your glute muscles forget how to work, and so if they're not working efficiently, then other muscles have to take over, and you can get problems with your lower back or possibly with your knee. So just before you start to bowl, just do a say 30 seconds to a minute of glute bridges. Glute bridges are where you lie on the ground with your feet flat on the floor as if you were going to do a sit-up,
Yeah.
but instead of doing a sit-up, you lift your hips off the ground
Okay.
and you squeeze your bum. You squeeze your glute muscles. So you squeeze them together. You lift your bum up off the ground. So your feet are flat on the ground, and your shoulders are on the ground.
Okay.
And you form a sort of triangle with the ground.
Yeah.
Hold that for 30 to 60 seconds, and that will fire the glute muscles before you go off and bowl. And it'll just remind them, because we sit around, spend a lot of our lives sitting around, sometimes we need reminding, our muscles need reminding, and that will remind them what to do. So do that beforehand, and also do a lot of core stability work. There's a lot of controversy around core stability, but one thing we know is that the stronger your muscles of your trunk are, around the middle of your body, the better they hold that lower back and the spine into the correct position that it should be held in.
Yeah.
And if the spine is held in the correct position, then you're not going to get any pain from it because it's in the correct position. But if it's in the wrong position, like with a mixed action, then you're asking for injury. Injury is just around the corner.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Some people get away with it. Some people bowl with a mixed action and never have any problems, but they're few and far between. So once you've got your shoulders and your hips aligned, then make sure that your spine is in a neutral position. But you can't you don't want to be thinking about your spine when you're bowling. You can't think about that. It's a reflex action. But if you've got strong core muscles, strong muscles in your lower back and your abdominal area, then they'll just naturally hold your spine in the right position as you're bowling.
Yeah.
Which is what you want to do.
He mentions in his question that he bowls at full pace for 10 overs, 7 to 10 overs anyway. Would you recommend sort of easing into his practice, not bowling at full pelt first up, just sort of warming up with a few loose deliveries and then sort of going hard out just to get his back warmed up and used to it?
That is a whole other issue. Yes, you should warm up. Definitely should warm up. But as a general rule, you warm up to play. You don't play to warm up.
Okay. All right.
Which is a common mistake. So what he should do is do some kind of dynamic warm up. You know, the type of thing I'm talking about, where you're doing dynamic stretches. You're doing maybe doing a light jog where you're kicking your you're doing kicks and stretches and things like that. But they're all done dynamically.
Yeah.
Once you've done a dynamic style warm up like that, then you can go to bowling. But I probably wouldn't say, you could start at a slower pace and build up. That isn't a major thing.
Yeah.
But what I'd probably say is do a dynamic warm up. Maybe do 5 or 6 sprints.
Yeah.
To really get your sort of nervous system firing.
Yeah.
And then go straight into bowling, and you can go straight into, as long as you've done a proper warm up, mm-hmm. and you've done a few sprints at the end of the warm up.
Yeah.
You don't need to do many. Just say 10 yards, mark out 10 meters or 20 meters,
yeah.
and do a sprint, walk back, wait for a few seconds, do another sprint, walk back, do 5 of those, and then you're really fired up then.
Yeah.
And then go straight to bowling. Maybe you want to bowl 1 or 2 looseners and then you're into it.
Okay. All right.
And besides, if his back won't hurt while he's bowling, because your body gives out a natural painkiller, unless it's really bad.
Yeah.
His back won't hurt while he's bowling. It'll be sore after he's bowled.
All right. Before we wrap up today, if you guys got any questions, just email us at mycoach@pitchvision.com. It's mycoach@pitchvision.com. Or alternatively, just head over to www.pitchvision.com and hit up the forums and post any questions you like, or have a read of other people's comments and ideas. So, signing off from Australia, this is Kevin Semper.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.